Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Puyatmann und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's episode, we are going to be discussing all the action from match day 24. We saw some great action on the pitch this weekend. However, it can't be understated the current events that are happening in the Ukraine. And we've seen many Zweite Bundesliga clubs and Bundesliga clubs provide solidarity to the current events that are happening. And Eva, it is great that football has been a platform for players to express themselves during this difficult time, but it is very hard and really saddening to not be near what's happening and just seeing it all unfold. It's really disheartening for those innocent people that are in the Ukraine that have to deal with this situation.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, I mean, a lot of innocent people are involved here, not only on the Ukrainian side, but also, you got to say, on the Russian side, racism in any way, anti-Semitism in any way, which is very much involving, especially for the ones fleeing Ukraine, is happening. Racism towards Russian people living in Germany, in the UK. So this is something we have to condemn as well. Obviously, a couple of important things. If you want to know more about this, listen to people who know what is happening, who have been in contact with people, with Ukrainian people, but also who, at least since 2014, know what is happening. I mean, this is not a new war in that kind of way. It's also not the first war since the end of World War II in Europe. This is something you really have to take care of when you speak about this, because it just really is not fair for people who are not made from Germany and have really seen a lot of war action since 70 years have passed. If you want to help, I only know this from Germany, but I know, and I think the UK as well, local stations, churches, whatever, they are collecting, all sorts of ibuprofen, but also everything from, not food, but a lot of stuff that the people might need that are, searching for refuge. So if you're able to, maybe check in with your locals, what they can do. Don't give away clothes you wouldn't wear yourselves. This is very dehumanizing. Mm. And if you can, obviously donate, if it's possible, not through Meta, so not through Instagram or Facebook, because this money doesn't get to Caritas and stuff until 4 weeks from the point that whole thing ended. I know from Germany, for example, if you can support Mission Lifeline or Caritas or Leave No One Behind, they also do a lot of stuff for Afghanistan, so this is still happening as well. I know this is a lot. Please take care of yourself. See that you don't share false information. I think that's all very important. And as you've mentioned, I think it's really, really huge that we've seen so much solidarity throughout the league as well. I think especially for maybe people who have Ukrainian friends, but also Ukrainian background, family in the Ukraine. It's very important to see solidarity. Football is a very international sport, and I think that's very, very important, and we've seen good things. For example, I know that in Hanover, before the DFB Pokal match tonight, the club, as well as ultra groups, fan groups, they're organizing all some sorts of collections. So, yes, and because it's, I think it's weird talking about football, but I think although it sounds weird and very privileged, we're able to have something that takes our mind out of this. If you're not able to listen to this right now, it's completely fine. But we just wanted to, yeah, say something about this because p football is never not political. So.
Amen. It needed to be said because there are so many people who will say that sport and these kinds of matters don't mix, but they do, because it sends a message to those who think that war is a good thing, or these kinds of atrocities, that that there are people out there who are willing to go against that kind of thing. We saw in, I think, Cologne, there was like 250,000 people in the streets. It was all over Germany, all over Europe. So these kinds of actions won't stand. And I think the one thing that we can all take away from war is that no one wins in the end, and it's just awful. And it is, and Eva is right. It is very difficult to talk about football, even though this is a football podcast, when you've got these kinds of events, and your the common people, are struggling. So yeah, we will attempt to talk football. There were nine games this weekend, and the big one was the Nord Derby at the Volksparkstadion. 25,000 people made their way to the home of Hamburg and saw plenty of goals. A very interesting encounter, but a Werder Bremen win. And Bremen are now nine games unbeaten. They get the win after losing the corresponding fixture at home. And it was through the penalty goals of Marvin Ducksz on 10 minutes, and then Niklas Füllkrug on 51 minutes. In between, then Jonas Meffert, who handled the ball in the for the first goal for Ducksz. He scored straight after half time, and then Ducksz scored again with a wonderful goal 15 minutes before time. Glatzel made things interesting, and we thought that Manuel Winsheimer had equalized in stoppage time. However, the initial cross into Robert Glatzel was just marginally offside. It's a massive win for Bremen. They were one of three winners in the top five. They stay top with a massive, massive win. And they did it in a multitude of ways. We noticed this when watching the game. They were a little bit predictable at times, but Hamburg didn't really have an answer for it.
Yeah, and I mean, you gotta say, very impressive, especially first, no, 60, 70 minutes, kinda. Thought especially in the first 15 to 20 minutes, Werder was very impressive away from home. Really, especially in front of that atmosphere. I mean, I think this is one of the most important things for derbies that the fans are back in the stadium. I think it does make a lot. I mean, a derby without fans is a bit like another, just any other football game, at least for, I think, people in front of the TVs who are not very involved in either club. But I think this was really, yeah, a top spiel, as you might say, that really, yeah, gotten what it was written about. And I think at some sort, I think I wasn't the only one really annoyed by everything, referee wise and VAR wise. Still think, especially this weekend, wasn't really an advocate for the VAR. But I gotta say, there was a video, there was an interview with Daniel Siebert after the game. I guess a really, really good interview. He explains his decisions. He first of all thanks both captains, both teams, that they never stop playing football. Although it was a difficult game to referee, it was difficult decisions that had to be made. And well, I mean, for some parts, I don't think it's necessary that referees have to, yeah, be part of the interview every week. But if you have a game like this and you have a referee who's glad that he speaks to someone who apparently has at least informed himself about the rules. For example, If we talk about the 1-0, there was, so Bittencourt was offside, and then there were talks, if he gives the handball, why isn't it deliberate play? Because it's not a new situation. Zibat explained this actually very well, because he was like, first of all, he thanked the interviewer for knowing that rule, because it's very difficult. And then he says, he understands why people would think that, but for him, it was a block, like the hand, it was not a deliberate action towards the ball. It's still handball, especially if we take into account the rules at the moment. He also apologizes it for that being a handball. I think I had the feeling he's not completely behind that rule as well. But he says for him, it's not a deliberate action, and that's why Bittencourt is still offside, but it has to be a penalty. So that, I think it always helps if you get some sort of information, background about this, and this is why I still think transparency in the stadium would be very good, that you just have more than goal, not goal, offside, not offside, handball, not handball, whatever. Yeah, and so the thing is, I still want to say, I think it took way too long. Especially if you talk about offside rules, it shouldn't take that long to decide. We had another scene for the potential 3-3, where it took way too long, in my opinion, to decide that. For the 1-1, because I'm just going to say everything that Siebert said, because obviously it was in German. It was taken away, and first I wasn't sure. But if you actually look at that scene, you can see that Toprak has the better chance of getting the ball. And Siebert says for him it wasn't a duel who gets the ball, but Glatzel actually takes advantage of that situation while pushing Toprak into Pavlenka. So for me, that's the most understanding decision of all. And then there was a foul, a potential foul by Alidou against Weiss, I think still in the first, don't know if it was, anyway, I think it was in the beginning of the second half. And then Zibat says, the thing is, for him, it wasn't a clear penalty, and he didn't send it into review because he saw it. And he was like, in a game like this, I can't really make three decisions in a row against HSV that are already discussable in a way, or at least in a fan perspective. And I think he handled that very well. And he said, for me, this wasn't a clear-cut penalty, and I think it's understandable. And yeah, I think that the rest of the decisions are quite clear as well. The hand penalty for against Yata is quite clear to me. I think this is, I mean, even in the years before, this would have been a penalty, in my opinion. It's way clearer than the first one. All in all, I think Hamburg could thank Heuer Fernandes. He was brilliant in the first half. Really, really good goalkeeper against Bittencourt and Ducksch. That was very good. For the second half, I think Werner, can't speak, made Walter, there's too many names because of the W, made the right move with taking off Alidou, getting on Jacques Vertaatse. And yeah, the goal by Ducksch was side for sore eyes, because we knew this is not going to get into review. I gotta say, for the last 10 minutes, I thought that Werder was too passive. I think if they would have gotten the equalizer, like, it was, in a way, it wouldn't have been undeserved, because I wrote it down in the last 10 minutes. If you look at the pass success, it was 88% to 45%. And in the whole was 85% to 71%. So the last 10 minutes, Werder didn't get out of their own half. They had a lot of mistakes from the back. And I think this is very unnecessary. I mean, we still have to say huge, huge win. It's their sixth win away from home in a row. And we kind of saw, because we were speaking about this, now the weeks begin for us to see where Werder can go on the long run. Will they make it to promotion? Yeah. And games like this are very important. They won it, maybe very close in the end, maybe unnecessarily close towards the end. But I think we're going to have a very interesting promotion fight, maybe a bit more interesting than last year. I don't know about you, but I'm really looking forward to that.
I mean, if it goes down to the last match day and we see the drama, then perfect. But that's to be seen. We earmarked this particular fixture as a massive one for both sides, especially Werder Bremen. When we had Max on a few weeks ago, this was something we spoke about, how, you know, they're going to play a team that it's a massive game. We all know the permutations of winning a derby fixture. But it also was a massive game for Hamburg, being that this is around the time that we've seen them start to fall apart a little bit. They did control this game possession-wise. They did have trouble entering the box at the best of times, although Bremen defended rather astutely. It wasn't until the final 10 minutes when Hamburg started to break the dam a bit. And that's when they created those chances and they got the goal, and then they almost snatched the equaliser. So the substitutions did work. Chuck Vatatse was, although maybe a little bit quiet compared to last week, he gave them a bit more they were a bit more dynamic in comparison to when they had Ali Du, who has been in some pretty ordinary form of late. And I think Chuck Vatatse would be a smart move to start. It'd be interesting to see if he starts him in that cup tie tonight, if you're listening to it on the Wednesday. So Hamburg have a pretty busy week coming up. They get Nuremberg on Saturday night away. And they've just come off two consecutive wins. So it will be fascinating. But at the moment, as it stands, Hamburg loses touch of the top three. Bremen remain top. Let's go to the team that is currently sitting in the top three. They are second. That is Darmstadt. They took on Dynamo Dresden. This was the Saturday night kickoff game in front of just over 10,000. This was a relatively even game. Both teams had their chances. We saw some very good goalkeeping from Marcel Schoen and Anton Matryoshkin. And Dresden had fought hard to get a point. In my eyes, they'd done so well. But much like Bremen, the last 10 minutes were really concerning. Inability to clear the ball outside the box. Darmstadt camped in their own offensive half. And on 93 minutes, Matthias Honsack pokes home from inside the six-yard box to give Darmstadt a massive win. It puts them in to second place. It's Matthias Honsack's first goal since the match day 13. And coinciding that, yesterday on Tuesday, Dynamo Dresden moved on from Alexander Schmidt. Yet to be named a head coach at the moment. Ferdun Zandi is taking over as caretaker for the time being. It looks like he will be in charge on the weekend at Bremen. This game was massive for both teams in terms of how it ended. We did see that Dresden had fought resolutely, but they were made to pay in the end because they had some really good chances in the second half and they were unable to convert them.
Yeah, and I think this is something Alexander Schmidt said in an interview after the game. I think the most disappointing thing was that shortly before Honsack scored, Carter had a huge, huge chance for Dresden to take all 3 points, and he missed. And you kind of have the feeling there is this saying there, things are just being, like, if you miss something like this, you're going to lose the game. And actually this happened, and I do felt sorry for Dresden because I thought the majority of the time they were on eye level with Darmstadt. But as you've mentioned, defending-wise, you just got to block this ball way earlier before it comes into the box. And I think We've have seen this throughout the season. I'm not completely sure if a change of manager does help them now. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I did like especially what they created from set pieces in the first half. Weihrauch and Batista Maia, really strong set pieces. And if you play against Darmstadt, you do not really expect to win. I know, as the Dresden said, you need every point. And as obviously with teams surrounding them picking up points, teams like Sandhausen. But at the same time, clubs like Rostock are not picking up points either, or not as they want at the moment, especially not at home. And I think what they did very well is irritating Darmstadt in the first half. Lieberknecht said this after the game. He said Darmstadt was very irritated by the fact that Dresden didn't play in a diamond shape and needed to get around this. And Schmidt says, yeah, this is what we have at the moment. It's the element of surprise, element of irritation. And it could have worked. But I think if you're missing that final percent of confidence in yourself, and then if you have opportunity missed like Harder did, it's very difficult. And Darmstadt at this point, they had more or less nothing to lose, because we know they haven't been in the best form either. And for them, this probably really helps, just getting things around again. But yeah, I mean, Mitrushkin has been a really, really good signing. We don't know if he might be vital towards the end, especially if you look at, goal difference. You do worry about Dresden. It's going to be interesting to see who they're going to pick as a coach. I'm kind of hoping not for some sort of coach we have seen over and over again. Maybe Michael Fronzek will return, says goodbye to Wolfsburg as a coach for Florian Kohfeldt. But I don't know. I do not know who would be the right pick at the moment, if it would be someone who knows what to do, or someone who just comes in very clean, has never really been in that situation before. I think it's dangerous. And I think also, if you look at the coaches available, there's not a lot of coaches that would say, go with him for sure. So, yeah.
I think I saw in a comment section that there was interest for Uwe Rosler to not my first choice either. Look, Dresden are one of three. They're one of two clubs yet to win this year. The other is Erzgebirger Aue, winless in their last seven. It seemed like it had run its race with Schmidt. It's really hard to say, because you hate to see situations like this where a coach loses their job, and they're the seventh club in the bottom nine that has changed their manager this season, which tells you everything you need to know about the situation. The two that haven't, Jan Regensburg and Hansa Rostock. So the change is happening. You mentioned Mitrushkin. He has been very good after that first game where he conceded four in the opening 17 minutes against Hansa. It will be interesting if he stays in net when Kevin Brawl becomes available, because he's also been very good in goal. So we'll wait and see. Good win for Darmstadt there in the cup tonight as well. So hopefully we'll see two teams, at least maybe two teams. It might only be one Zweite Bundesliga team after St. Pauli, who played this last night, were beaten by Union Berlin 2-1. But they did win their Zweite Bundesliga game on the weekend. They beat Ingolstadt 3-1 in front of 5,500 people at the Audi Sport Park. Started on 22 minutes when Daniel Kofi-Kire opened the scoring with a wonderful free kick to get his seventh goal of the season. Dennis Eke Ayanza, who's really come to the party for Ingolstadt since Rudi Grimm has been in charge, he would get his second goal of the campaign on 35 minutes. But shortly after, Ingolstadt couldn't tame St. Pauli. A wonderful bit of movement between Marcel Hartl and Guido Burgstaller, with the talisman in Burgstaller netting just only 2 minutes after Jens's equaliser. He has 17 goals this season and remains the league's top scorer. St. Pauli really put Ingolstadt to bed in the second half. Simon Mäkinen got his fourth goal of the campaign on 55 minutes, and he could have easily got his fifth just moments later. It was a simplistic win for Pauli, who we know have been in rather questionable form of late. They did it with good tempo. They were very strong with their wide attacks. We know that they utilized Paccarada extremely well in this game. He was on hand to assist, to at least be a first or secondary assister for a couple of goals. It's a big win, but I think their talking point for me in this game, and we saw it in the cup, is defensively the individual errors are so killer. Against teams like Ingolstadt, you can get away with it. But against better sides, as we have seen, they will be punished. And as we saw in the cup, that set that both goals came from individual errors. It's a problem. They re-enter the top three, but it's not all well at St. Pauli.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I was at that point where you said Ingolstadt could actually take a point away from this because of how they played against Werder. I mean, sometimes it's just that, I don't know, small percentage of individual class that, just puts you above your opponent. And, I mean, Ingolstadt did play well. They didn't back down after the 1-0. But you got to say, they were also very naive in defending. So especially Antonic versus Burgstaller, that's in pass way too easy. Then in the end, maybe also lack of luck on the Ingolstadt side. I mean, if you Vasil made that mistake and Schmidt can't use it, it doesn't help. And I think, we've been saying they might make it interesting, but I think games like this, it's very, very difficult to get out of that situation. Now, I mean, Rüdiger said after the game, they have been stable throughout, or since he took over in defense, didn't concede too many goals. I mean, it doesn't help if you say it after you just conceded three goals to St. Pauli. And if you look at the XGs, I know, don't overinterpret this, but it's 0.62 to 1.32. So it says a bit about the game they let let St. Pauli score too easily. I don't know if this team helps both sides. I mean, as you said, the individual errors on both sides, but actually especially on the St. Pauli side, are worrying. Last night, I mean, they were in the Pokal when they played Union Berlin. I mean, first of all, obviously it's Bundesliga, it's the second Bundesliga, but as a club who wants to get promoted at this stage, this is something you should know you cannot do against the Bundesliga side. And I mean, especially in midfield, I mean, there were young players like Beifuß, who only played like 10 minutes in this season so far. They do mistakes, that's okay. I like the way Timo Schulz always was right behind him, right beside him, and said, okay, come on, don't let yourself down. But that team yesterday consisted of a lot of new players. Mm-hmm. I do have to say I liked Irvine on the sixth. Like, that was a good move. But in general, you destroy a game if you have do make mistakes like that, especially with a club who has someone like Andreas Vogelsammer, who just is not only very build up kind of, but also very fast, which you might not think, or quite fast, you could say. And he will use those mistakes. Yeah, as mentioned, I don't know. I mean, St. Pauli plays Karlsruhe next. I mean, they both play or played in the Pokal. For Karlsruhe, we obviously don't know how this will end. They play HSV, obviously. And yeah, I mean, it can help them. But at the same time, I'm not quite sure. For Ingolstadt, the game against Düsseldorf will be huge. And we've seen, we will speak about this later, we've seen Düsseldorf maybe draw points on the weekend. So maybe they can use that. But I do think, I do feel sorry because I think they put up a good fight. But for me, the last two places are now quite cut out. Don't think we will see a lot of change.
Yeah. With results elsewhere, Ingolstadt do drop back to the bottom of the table. But he was not wrong in saying, Rudy Graham was not wrong in saying, that defensively they've become more stable. In the month of February, prior to this match, they'd only conceded once in three games. Heading into this match today, that was equal best with Sandhausen, the best defensive records in the month of February. So that as well as Hamburg were in that mix as well. So it says a lot when you look at a few teams, you know, they were one of two teams that entered with only one goal conceded in the month, who conceded three times at home. So he's not right, but the deficit is, with 10 games to go, it seems far too great. They would need a Hansa or a Sandhausen or a Dynamo to completely fall off a cliff to get close, but I just can't see it. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our Group 2 games, starting with Karlsruhe and Schalke. With wins to Bremen, Darmstadt and St. Pauli, pressure was on for Schalke to get a result in Karlsruhe on Saturday. The BB Bank Wildpark had 15,000 all crammed in, it seemingly, to the left of screen, where majority of the Karlsruhe fans stationed. Both teams traded chances early, but it would be Simon Terodde on 27 minutes opening the scoring, and it would be Karlsruhe's Achilles heel set-piece defending where the goal would come in. Ovuyan headed on to Bulsa, and Terodde in a world of space, tucking home his 16th goal of the campaign. Karlsruhe immediately responded with an opportunity on goal through Philip Hoffmann, but his effort hit the post. And then 34 minutes, 7 minutes after the Schalke goal, they would equalise with Marco Tieter's ball into the box, confusing all of the Schalke's defenders. Kyung-Rok Choi was on hand to tuck home the equaliser. It certainly seemed as if the game was heading to a draw, but on 89 minutes, Schalke thought they were going to go ahead. Wonderful ball into Marvin Pieringer, but Pieringer's effort was a little bit too tame, and it was saved by Marius Gersbeck. A great opportunity it was for De Koninckx-Blauer, especially because they really needed the result. Karlsruhe, on the other hand, it's a good result for them. It keeps them in relatively good form. They've had a solid February. They've won twice out of their four games, and they've only conceded four goals. It's not a great result for Schalke. It's something that's becoming a bit of a problem for them. This season, they go ahead, they concede soft goal, they can't break teams down, and they're left with a point. And I'm not saying it's a bad point against Karlsruhe, but when you look at the situation around the league, it is a bad draw in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think just looking at the game, I think it was actually quite interesting to watch from both sides, what they did right and what they did wrong. Actually, I think in the end this is a better result for Karlsruhe, especially seeing the last couple of weeks, especially going into their huge game against St. Pauli. I mean, what did irritate me a bit, I think it's whoever did the highlights for the Sportshow was was on my side there. It's was quite the usual picture with Evian to Tirode, and that was a goal. It's like he doesn't really understand how it's still possible that after set pieces, Tirode can basically do whatever he wants against the majority of the clubs in this league. For me, Karlsruhe was better, especially in the first half. Schalke was the efficient team. And for that goal for Karlsruhe, I mean, it's understandable that they thought it's offside. But, I mean, we have been saying this, especially since the VAR is in place. Don't stop playing. If it's offside, it's going to be taken away anyway. And I mean, we've seen this, that you gotta keep play on, and even the referee is going to give the offside even afterwards. So I don't really understand why Sané and Itakura just completely stopped playing. There is no referee in the world gonna say, okay, this goal doesn't count because you thought it's offside and stop playing. This is not how it works. And so I thought this was. I said it like a couple of weeks. I had the feeling Schalke is not that naive anymore. They finally arrived in the Bundesliga, the Zweite Liga, sorry. And they made a case of proving me wrong. And I'm not overly convinced that it's going into the right direction. I think in general it was a very close game. Sadly, only two goals. I think there could have been more easily, at least two more. I think in the end, this, as said before, this result does help Karlsruhe more, because I do think they know the season is going to end rather quietly. But for Schalke, obviously, the pressure is a bit higher. And with teams around them picking up points, as you've mentioned, they don't look the most comfortable in getting that promotion in the end.
Yeah. And we talk about the goal that Karlsruhe would score. The only case that goal gets taken away is if Goller does touch the ball, because he was offside in that play, but smartly realizes that and allows Choi to have a 1-on-0 at the edge of the 6-yard box. Brilliant defending. It's hard to win games when you manage two shots on target out of 16 attempts. This was not a game of efficient attacking football in terms of shots on goal. 36 attempts on goal and only 6 on target. It's not great. I mean, it's a problem, and both teams really were able to make attempts but not create strong attempts. I mean, both teams just produced attacking football but couldn't really finish it off. And yeah, Schalke's game against Rostock on Saturday is massive. It's massive for both teams, really, because Schalke desperately need a win, as do Rostock, because they hosted Nürnberg on the weekend at the Osterstadion, and we know that Rostock has not been a happy hunting ground for Hansa. 10,000 made it in attendance, and I think we've had a pretty similar story all year with them. They're able to create chances at home, they're unable to convert the chances. They concede a penalty through fouling Talan Duman. Kolke saves said penalty, and it was a brilliant save. But despite there being plenty of Hansa players in the vicinity, it was Pascal Kopka who scored in his second consecutive game on 33 minutes. He headed past Kolke to make it 1-0. And then Duman, who'd been pretty much everywhere once again, he scores his second goal in consecutive games, and it was a wonderfully hit goal with power and conviction past the Hansa goalkeeper. And even when Rostock try and score at home, they find ways not to. Their best chance was basically in stoppage time. It was a wonderful ball in from Rizzuto. It somehow finds Meissner, with Matenia nowhere near the picture And Meissner is unable to score and the ball gets cleared away. And that sums up Rostock at home. It's just so painful that they're able to play some nice football. They're very creative in making chances. But gosh, they're so horrible at finishing their dinner. Like, imagine getting something, your dream meal, and for some reason you decide you're just unable to finish it. That's what Rostock are at home. It's another loss for them. It now puts them into the bottom three. And it makes this weekend's game massive for them.
Yeah, I mean, you could really see Jens Hertel after the game being, actually, excuse my language, but completely pissed off, saying, I don't want to be here after every home game and saying, we didn't win. Sorry for all the fans that came. You don't deserve this. And I think the most frustrating thing is really that they try. They show good attempts. But the thing is that has been the case since match day one is that the mistakes they do, the like things like the penalty they give away, it's too naive, it's too easy. And if you're the smaller club or the not a club really an advantage in any way, it's very difficult for you to come back from this. You always have the feeling as soon as their opponents score once, everything they do afterwards is without any sort of order. It doesn't seem like they have, after that, they have really a match plan going forward. It's just like, whatever you do, just score. And I understand that in a case, but it doesn't help you because it makes it very easy for your opponents to use this because you don't have order. The pass success on both sides was horrible, under 70%, which says a lot about Nuremberg in this game as well. It wasn't a good game by Nuremberg by far. I mean, if you look at that last chance by Tempelmann, this could be one of the moments where you say if you don't score that goal, beautiful executed counter attack actually, but then yeah, it was a good save by Koeke, but I did expect a bit more of Tempelmann in that situation. For the Duman goal, what I saw is that you have three Rostock players that are in the box and they are just going with the ball. You could see that Duman is like really searching for that free pass through the goal, and the players are actually making it very easy because there's like triangle shape, line shape, whatever defense line that is just running behind the ball and not focusing on the player, but just focusing on the ball. And I thought this was not really good. And I think this is something you can say it happens at the beginning of the season, but if we are in the kind of last quarter of a season, I don't know, it's as mentioned before, it's too naive. I'm not a huge fan of changing culture, especially now if you have been promoted. But I mean, at this stage, I don't really know if it's just in the head that they don't win at home, that they give up goals so easily like this. And I mean, the only really, really good performance in this past couple of weeks was the win against Dresden. And no offense to both teams, but they both were promoted from the Dritte Liga. And you got to put it into perspective. And I got to say, if you look at teams like Sandhausen, obviously they have been in the league longer, but they seem more mature. They seem more ready for the task. They took the task. They knew what to focus on. And we will speak about them in a moment. And I don't know... I think it makes it very difficult for fans, for even for the coach to actually see what's happening next, because they could easily win the game against Schalke now. It would perfectly fit into that inconsistency, because obviously it's away from home. And you do have the feeling that maybe the thing is, if you talk about good atmosphere in the stadium, it's good as long as it's working, if it's working at home. But, and we know that sometimes this can come with huge pressure. I know Sebastian Schuppan talked about this once in Dresden, that this support is good as long as it's going great for your club. As soon as the tables are turning, this can, even if it's not them booing in the stadium, I don't mean this, but it can just shift. You feel a lot of different pressure, and obviously that's why it's easier to play away from home, because you don't have that pressure looking over you all the time. So I don't know. I think it's very difficult for me to say where the path is going to end. What I think is very clear is that they really, really need to focus on, if they're not scoring at home, being more mature in defending.
Yeah, it feels like it's the same old every week, and it's frustrating, and you know that they can play at the level, but they just find new and impressive ways to not win games. And once again, they were put in a situation where they just couldn't hold station defensively. And in most cases you're going to take more points at home than you are away. That's just the kind of the usual litmus. The problem is for Rostock, they look far better away from home, and it would be on brand for not for them to beat Schalke as much as it would be on brand for Schalke to lose on the weekend. Pretty on brand. For Nürnberg, 2 wins in a row, and they're only 2 points behind Schalke and Hamburg. And as we've seen, we have to play it virtually week by week, how things are going. They can put themselves back in the mix. They will need to beat Hamburg on the weekend to do so. But they're an outside chance, a rather large outside chance. But you never know. You never know. Let's move on to our final Group 2 game. It's Heidenheim and Sandhausen. This was at the arena that they play in Heidenheim. I'm not going to name the sponsor for that because they do bad things. This was a pretty even game. Heidenheim probably had the better of the chances. And on 27 minutes, they won a penalty when Erik Berko did a hand well, he handled the ball, and it was very tight whether it was inside the penalty box or not. In the end, Patrick Alt and the officiating crew decided it was a penalty in the end. Tobias Mohr tucks that away, and it's 1-0. And you think from there maybe Heidenheim would go on, but no. Sandhausen showed a bit of fight, and only 5 minutes later, former Arminia Bielefeld player Sebio Suku got on the score sheet. It was a wonderful goal. Berko did very well to find Suku in the first place. And some, well, I don't know what was going on defensively with Heidenheim. We've got a defender who's jumping out of the way, and the others are not doing anything to really thwart Suku and his wonderful goal. Got Sandhausen on level terms. He almost scored in the second half as well. After a Dumic clearance somehow found its way, and Suku virtually travelled the length, from halfway to the 18-yard box, virtually unchallenged. Maybe could have played a ball to Bachmann or Testrot. Went on his own, forced a really good save. And in the end, neither team could find the winning punch. Sandhausen had been very good defensively in February. They'd only conceded twice, which is the best defensive record in this month. But there's one player that they've really that's really helped solidify them in midfield. It's Tommy Tribal, who they brought in as a free after leaving Hanover, where he virtually barely played, the former Norwich midfielder, former Bremen midfielder as well. He's been outstanding for them, not only in the fact that he can provide defensive stability, but you look at the fact that he's able to read the play very well, and he's given them a linchpin in midfield that they haven't had all season.
Yeah, and I mean, they have been, especially in February, they are the second best team after Werder Bremen. They picked up 9 points from those games, from these four games. And yeah, they this was actually the first time over 300 minutes that they conceded a goal away from home. Very strong side. Sandhausen being strong away from home. What is happening? Season is so weird. and I mean, yeah, I think it's a good result for them in the end. They were kind of very efficient. Used Heidenheim's mistake. Because Toya Kauf and Busch, you were talking about that. I think Toya Kauf is the one jumping kind of away from the ball. Really strong run by Zuku as well, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, Heidenheim was the slightly better team, but especially after the goal, after with the very quick equalizer by Zuku, I had the feeling that, kind of the power was a bit shifting there. The game could have gone either way, in my opinion, in the end. And, I mean, Zuku hasn't been really the center of attention for Sandhausen in the last couple of weeks. But I think with games like this, it really shows why Sandhausen signed him at the beginning of the season. And he also said, and quite funny actually, because he said in the game after, in this interview after, then can't speak anymore, that they got a lot of new players. And it's like, you're one of those new players. But he actually was talking about the transfer window in winter, but he said you can see that we actually slightly knowing what to do with a squad we have, and obviously what you talked about, Priebel has he fit into that team quite nicely. He established to what Alois Schwarz idea of football is very quickly, and I think Sandhausen needed that someone who knows the Zweite Bundesliga already, because he played at the Hanover before, and so he knows what weaknesses and strengths the other teams have without really studying it a lot before. I think for Sandhausen, didn't expect them to turn this around like this, but very impressive, and especially against a Heidenheim side who's quite strong at home. This was a good result for Sandhausen, probably two less for Heidenheim.
Yeah, I think the thing with Sandhausen is they're starting to build something there. They are only one of two teams in the last five games that are unbeaten. The other is Werder Bremen, of course. But two wins and three draws, and they have climbed out of a position where they were in peril, a bit of peril. In that bottom three, and now they leapfrog Hansa. For Heidenheim, I guess another missed opportunity. They're expected to win at home. They were without Tim Kleindienst. Stefan Schimmer really didn't have a lot to offer in this game. And it kind of showed, he may have had five shots on target, but he was very, very wasteful. So, ultimately, not a bad result for Sandhausen, but for Heidenheim, they're still in the mix, but much like Nürnberg, they are on the outside looking in. Let's take a break, and on the other side, we're going to discuss our final three matches of Match Day 24, and we're going to start with that six-goal thriller at the Benzler Arena, Paderborn and Erzgebirge Aue. Two teams who are seeking a victory in the month of February were Erzgebirge Aue and Paderborn. Paderborn, as we know, have really struggled to win from home. In fact, they've only won twice this season, whilst we know Aue's historically poor run away from home. It started well for the hosts when Marcel Correa was able to find Dennis Sabeni, who headed in on 26 minutes. This would be a trend, by the way, that would haunt Aue later down the line. Inability to defend crosses into the box. But Aue showed great fight in the second half with new manager Pavel Dojchev, who has now assumed role of head coaching duties as well as his sporting directing duties, with Mark Hensel being relegated to secondary once again. They would receive a penalty on 63 minutes, when I believe it was a handball situation, and it was rightfully called. Nazarov scored, and then moments later, Ben Zielinski doubled the scoring tally and gave Auer the lead, formerly of Paderborn. He scored a brilliant goal to give Auer the lead, and then Owusu was fouled by Correa, who was suspect in defending the second goal. He fouled Owusu. Owusu, who may not have scored in this game, was very lively. Nazarov scores again, and it's 3-1 with 20 minutes to play. And it seems from here that Auer are going to secure an important away win and close the gap on the teams ahead of them. But we mentioned Auer's inability to defend crosses, and it would cost them so dearly in the final few moments of this game. Because on 89 minutes, substitute and loan signing Kemal Adeyemi opened his Paderborn account when he headed past Martin Manal. Now, it should be noted he had a goal taken away only 15 minutes earlier. And then 2 minutes later, with Jannik Hoot even up for the corner, ball comes in. Initial header is well saved by Martin Manal, and Marcel Correa, of all people, who really had a mixed bag of a game, he assisted Sabeni's goal. He would get on the score sheet, and the game would end 3-3. After 99 minutes of game time, neither team could be separated in the end. But let's not take away, there's two main talking points from this. A, Auer cannot defend any sort of cross out from a wide position, let alone from a central position or just any sort of cross whatsoever. And that Paderborn were really not good in this game, and they only just took advantage of the deficiencies of their opponent to get something out of this game. They were very, very poor. I think a lot of their fans were disappointed with the results. And yeah, it caps off a winless February for the Nordsieben, and they're pretty much out of promotion race now, you would have to say.
Yeah, I think especially that last part, I think for the majority of the fans, that was clear for a couple of weeks now. Talking about Auer, because I did like them in this game. And if you cut out like the last 10 minutes or 5 minutes, I mean, three players I want to talk about. Strauss, I really liked him in this game. His crosses were always very dangerous, and then the combination with Owusu and Nazarov. I think the Owusu we see now at our is kind of hints at what he could have been at Bielefeld and Paderborn as well. You could see that this goal against Düsseldorf really pushed him a bit. Still like where what was he was doing, and I mean you got to talk about Zielinski as well. The interesting thing was when long balls were coming in, the Paderborn defense or Paderborn in general were mainly focusing on Owusu for long balls, and that's why free reigns for Zielinski is how he can score that goal as well. But you gotta say, after the 3-1, Auer was way too passive. Was too easy for Paderborn to actually cave them into their own half. And I said that after the game, results like this, they really break you. Don't think they can recover. I gotta say, I didn't like. I like what Dodgev did. I don't know if it's solely because of him, but Auer was really good at pressing forward as well as the counter attacks. And you might have wondered, as an Auer fan, like, why didn't we see this before away from home? Because we know they're not the strongest side away from home. Okay, talking about strength with them this season is a bit difficult. But yeah, for them, it's really, really difficult imagining recover from this, because we're at that stage where you say this is not going to work out very great. Yeah, I don't know what to say anymore. Just good thinking by Paderborn subbing off Højer after he encountered a head injury. That was quick thinking. But yeah, this result doesn't help either club. It doesn't help analyzing or really, especially we've been so far throughout this season. It's really difficult imagining, for me at least, that our will turn this around. And they have a very, very important match on the weekend against Jahn Regensburg. They need to win this. Not only draw, but I need to win this.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up that incident with Hoyer, who was eventually subbed off. And it reminded me of a video I was watching from DW Kickoff about concussions in football and how football is so far behind almost every other sport, and that the protocols that they actually have are just terrible because it puts pressure on medical personnel to make quick decisions, and it doesn't give them the right amount of time to evaluate a player after a head knock. So kudos to Paderborn for making a quick decision and subbing him out of the game, because as we know, the long-term effects of, you know, severe concussions or continuous head knocks can be things like dementia and you know, it's that no one wants to see those kinds of things happen. So kudos to them. In terms of the game, we've pretty much covered it. The result helps no one, especially not Erzgebirge Aue. I think Paderborn were really, the way their season kind of started to progress after match day 10 was that they were middle of the road, and they've shown that. They showed glimpses that they can be really, really dangerous as an attacking force, but they just can't put it together, and this was another one of those games where they were very lucky to get a result, and against the better team, they don't come back in this game. No question about it. Let's make a move to the HDI Arena. This was the other Friday night game. Hanover took on Holstein Kiel in front of 9,200 people. This game is fascinating because in its early phases, it felt like Holstein Kiel were going to make an impression. But a goalkeeper by the name of Ron Robert Ziller, who was just brilliant in this game, making save after save after save. He made some really important saves early on in the game and even in the second half. And, you know, Hanover had their moments, but it definitely didn't seem as if they would open the scoring. But there's just one guy who is just continues to be the player for Hanover, and it's Sebastian Kirk. We mentioned this last year that if you're relying on Sebastian Kirk, you're probably going to get relegated. Osnabrück dealt with that last season, but it just works for Hanover, and I can't explain it, because on 65 minutes he would score. The substitution of Linton Minor was important because it really unlocked Hanover down the left-hand side. His combination play with Niklas Hult, very, very important. That led to the opening goal. Those two will be on hand again for the second goal, which was brilliant. It was genius, it was nonchalant, and I love that he put the ball on the back of the net, because in those situations, you don't expect the initial shot, which were from Demirs, which was going wide, and it looks like from the close shot that they had, that Niklas Hult was offside. So putting the ball on the back of the net doesn't really hurt, it's just like, yep, whatever. But when the referee doesn't put the flag up because he's actually onside, because Alexander Muhling doesn't get back onside after tracking Linton Minor in the initial phase of that build-up, it becomes an extraordinary goal. It was incredible. It's amazing because we saw a few weeks ago Niklas Hult was on the wrong end of a rather comedic own goal where the clearance from a Hanno defender went into his mush and then into the back of the net. In this situation, he's on hand to score a wonderful, a really genius goal and to put Kiel away. It's a massive win for Hanover. It puts them 6 points clear of Hansa Rostock. Meanwhile, even for Kiel, after we'd seen such a recent run of good form, it's now two consecutive defeats for Kiel.
And I mean, I'm not quite sure whether to say. I mean, that 3-0 win over St. Pauli really was a confidence boost for Hanover. Not really sure about this in this game. I mean, they, if you just look at the result, you might think that finally we've seen some consistency. I mean, they picked up points, but I think the only, in my opinion, the only difference to what happened before when they picked up the wins under Dabrowski was that they actually, after scoring the first goal, they kept on playing and did just not cave in their own half. They didn't back down. I mean, you got to say, Hult doesn't even know how he got on the score sheet for that one. I had to look at that goal like 4 or 5 times because I did get what was happening there. Once again, got to say, Baia is really, really making the difference for Hanover as well. Although you don't really see it on the score sheet, but if we talk about Sebastian Kerk, I think we've got to talk about Baia as well. He has been fantastic. Martin Kind really wants to keep him at Hanover. I do think Hoffenheim has something against that. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think Kiel was a bit unlucky in this game as well. I mean, obviously they were always kind of taking the first step in both halves, having the first chance, and then Hanover answered kind of. They could have gone or taken the lead as well as concede in the first half. Neumann strong twice against Hanover. And I think in general, we saw some better football despite the horrible quality of the pitch. I do hope Hanover only leaves it for the Leipzig game today and then changes it because Jesus Christ, this is not how a stadium should look like, especially not in the second Bundesliga. I did like Mühling once again for Kiel. This one scene where he's really strong versus 3 Hanover players, and then Cobb is just very unlucky missing that shot. But yeah, who else than Kerk versus Kiel? He always scores against Kiel. He scored with Osnabrück, he now scores with Hanover. Yeah, for Hanover, they turn it around, similar to a couple of other clubs. Game against Sandhausen is going to be huge anyway for both sides. But yeah, and for Kiel, I think they're just glad that they're not getting relegated this season, not taking the playoff, I don't know, however you want to call it, getting relegated. All the best to Eintracht Braunschweig in that section. But yeah, Hanover deserved to win this, especially after they took the lead. This is what I wanted to see from them for a very long time, actually continue to play after they took the lead, and they did it in this game, and that's why I think they deserve to win.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. Like, they really showed great energy after scoring, but I also think bringing on Linton Miner really unlocked that left-hand side, and you can see, as mentioned earlier, the combination play between the two. Yeah, it means that the two are actually level on points now. Two games clear of Hansa in 16th. So we'll see how those two teams progress, but yeah, I also like Mark Demirs as well. He's been a really good influence on that Hanover midfield since joining from Feyenoord. So they've got some good things coming, and yeah, important game for them coming up to ensure that they are able to stave off that relegation fight. Now our final game of the match day takes us to the Jahn Stadion Regensburg. It was Jahn Regensburg taking on Fortuna Düsseldorf. Of course, Regensburg have been in wretched form of late, losing 9 of their last 11 games. Whilst Fortuna Düsseldorf had 1-2 consecutive, were hoping to make it 3. However, they would be without their star man, Reuven Hennings, up top, as he was he had a yellow card suspension, which meant that Daniel Ginczek would lead the line in a front three that included Felix Klaus and Carly Naro. But it just didn't have the same energy. It didn't really feel the same. And it was a bunch of half chances here And then Regensburg thought they had taken the lead with a wonderful set piece, which eventually found Max Bushushkov. But he and every other Regensburg player was offside when the ball was being delivered in that scene. And literally neither team could break each other down. We saw Sobotka miss that chance early in the first half, and I will never understand how he missed the target from the edge of the six-yard box. And yeah, it was just neither team really did enough to win this game. Probably the thing of note is Dusseldorf's defense. We know that they'd really struggled under Christian Preußer, but the signing of Jordi De Vries and the return of Andre Hoffmann has stabilized them defensively in their last four matches together, three of those under Daniel Thune. They've only conceded three times. It is a positive that defensively they're starting to improve, but we would suspect that they really missed Hennings that much that they couldn't find the back of their net in the end.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I didn't really know what to say about this game. I mean, I think for Regensburg, it's probably the better result. It's not the result they really wanted to turn this around, but it's a step in the right direction for Düsseldorf, especially if you look at teams around them that might be disappointed that it was only a point, that they couldn't do more to get the distance between them and the relegation places. Yeah, as mentioned, I think overall Düsseldorf was the better team. They couldn't use Bezushkov's mistake. They had the better game in general. And that's basically what I can say about this game. I mean, I think this is not really the game that will determine what happens to both clubs at the end of the season. But I think, yeah, as mentioned, I think it does help Regensburg a bit more than it does Düsseldorf, especially in terms of turning it around. For Regensburg, we talked about this plenty of times now. The game against Aue is going to be huge. They both need wins. Regensburg, if they want to build on that mini positive trend, you can say, they want to win that, but at the same time, Aue desperately needs to win this for Düsseldorf. It's kind of similar with Ingolstadt if they want to maybe already make the pre-decision about relegation. They want to win this game against Ingolstadt, and Ingolstadt really wants to maybe not blow out that final candle on at least reaching the playoff spot. So yeah, I think we're really coming into that part of the season where maybe not all games on the weekend are very interesting. Maybe not always good football, but a lot of them, the majority of them does determine a lot what is going to happen towards that maybe last two weeks of April and the 2 weeks of May.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best time of the season. We now have a picture of who's in the mix to go up, which we still have no idea who's going to go up in the end. And same with who's going to be in the playoff, because it seems pretty inevitable that Ingolstadt and Erzgebirge Aue will go down, but who will join them? Now, Düsseldorf, had they won this game, would have put themselves 3 points, actually 4 points clear from Rostock in 16th. So they're still in danger, 2 points ahead. In the end, they're in that tight scrap with Dresden, Sandhausen, and of course Hansa. But you know, they're unbeaten they've taken 7 points out of nine with Daniel Thune in charge. That's a positive. They can also take note that at least they kept the clean sheet, which Regensburg are equally in that boat. It's Regensburg's first clean sheet since match day 19 when they beat Sandhausen 3-0. Since then, they've lost 4 of their last 5 games, with a draw, of course, on the weekend. Now, there are 3 bits of information before we go. Of course, we like to talk about our kick tip league. And Yannick has re-emerged as the title fighting leader. He now has 240 points, and he managed to get back on top because he and our good friend Lewis topped the sheets with 16 points apiece. Congratulations to you both. I am not jealous at all. I am not upset that I am terrible at this, but it is what it is. We are also going to, from now on, we are going to, each month, we're going to release our team of the month, which Eva and I have compiled after many, many hours of rigorous discussion and debate. We will be announcing that on Thursday. So if you think that our team is incorrect or you'd like to debate, let us know what your team will be. We'll post that on Thursday, and you can come at me if you want. If you don't particularly like the team, I can take it. So, yeah, we think our team is pretty good and very representative of the month of February. But we're always happy for discussion. And finally, we've already mentioned all the stuff about the Ukraine and all the things you can do to help during this situation, but there's another thing that I wanted to discuss. So this week, what I'm recommending that you go and give a follow is a Scottish website called a brand called FC United to prevent suicide. You can find the hashtag at _FC United. It deals with the serious world of suicide and the difficult conversations that we have. It's a really tight-knit community, and I urge you to help and support in any which way you can. You know, there are many great organizations around the world that do it. Here in Australia, we have Beyond Blue, and suicide is no joke, and you know, it can have an adverse effect to anyone, you know, friend, family, someone you know. It's a really serious thing, and something that, you know, we can all get behind in helping, and that just starts with a conversation. If you feel a friend of yours or someone isn't acting their normal self, instigating that conversation and seeing how they're going, just to say how they are, just asking if they're okay, and just being there, being that support network, and we can help prevent that kind of situation. So yeah, you can find them also at their website as well. It's at unitedtopreventsuicide.org.uk. Go check them out for more information. That's it for our Matchday 24 review. We'll be back next week to discuss all the action from Matchday 25. We're finally in the nitty-gritty part of the season. As always, stay safe. Enjoy the weekend's action. I know even I can't wait to discuss all the action again on Wednesday. Until then, goodbye.